This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
This is Everything Elite, the world's best podcast devoted exclusively to All Elite Wrestling and the Elite Extended Universe. I'm Aaron Bentley. I'm joined, as always, by my good friend, Nate, a.k.a. Epitasis. What's up, Nate?
Hello, Aaron. Hello, listeners, friends, family, gathered dignitaries. I'm eating some maple-flavored bacon jerky. Okay. Walgreens store brand. So that's pretty exciting. What's up with you?
Do you have any family members who know that the podcast exists?
I don't think so. I'm pretty sure I don't.
Okay.
I've had some family members at times follow my Twitter account. I think I've pretty much evaded or eluded all of them at this point. I'm pretty confident because I have one of my family members as part of her employment has started producing a podcast for like a larger podcast network, like a significant podcast network.
Ooh.
So sometimes this goes around the family emails and they talk about, oh, wow, it's so cool, a podcast. And I'm like, yeah, it's neat. And I just avoid it.
We got to get on this podcast network.
I don't know that this podcast network would have much interest in our subject matter of choice.
That's too bad. I'm very sad to hear that, considering this great connection that you have. Oh, well. Mike is also here. Mike, I want to ask you what's up, and I also want to know, do you have any family connections that could really be good for this podcast?
I mean, hey, y'all. It's your old pal, Aaron Mike Spears. I mean, I do and I don't. I'm going to leave it as that. My family, however, is aware of the podcast, as we've had family members of mine on the show. So yes, it is a different situation entirely. Nate, I have to ask you, we haven't had an update in a while, buddy. How are the succulents?
The succulents exist as much this week as they did last week, to quote a great thinker. They are due for a watering, so I should do that this weekend. Yesterday I did pull one of my succulents over here while I was watching the AEW because I got a new Jimmy Lloyd sticker.
Oh, hell yeah.
My largest plant here, I have used its planter for a home to all my various stickers, which are things like a Hao Ming sticker, got a DDT English Update sticker, my Hikari Noah autograph sticker, and now I've got on there next to the Neo Ito Respect Army sticker, I have a giant sticker of Jimmy Lloyd's bloody face.
I think that's fitting, though. I mean, right next, I think that Maki Ito would be a Jimmy Lloyd fan. I think she would like the different boy if she knew him, or as much as Maki Ito does tolerate people.
Yeah.
I was thinking of your succulents last night, Nate, because friend of the show, at Glitchbat on Twitter, who made the well-known Momo Watanabe keychain, custom keychain that I ordered. They did a post last night with some of their succulents in the background.
That's cool.
Showing off some new charms that they got. And I thought, I wonder how these stack up to Nate's succulents. It's kind of what I was thinking.
There's this gimmick going around that was like share a window or something. I don't know. Leon was tweeting about it where you go to a website and it gives you like a video feed of somebody's window and you go, you know, browsing for windows or whatever. And I was like, oh yeah, I guess I could submit my windowsill full of succulents. But then it really seems kind of pointless all in all. So I didn't.
Okay. Well, maybe we'll be able to get Nate to post some pictures of the succulents at Everything AEW.
If anything, it's going to be exclusive Patreon content.
There we go. Let's monetize it, baby. Let's go.
That's a good idea. If that makes you mad, just send a message to at Epitasis. I'm at Aaron Like the Card. Nate. Oh no, shit, I'm doing my patter, but I've also already said Epitasis. Mike is at Fuji. Hey ya. You can subscribe to the podcast. Please do. You get these as soon as they come out. Give us a rating and review if you're on the Apple Podcast app. And if you want to support the show and get a little bonus audio for your trouble, you can go to patreon.com/everythingelite. On this show, we're going to run down Fight for the Fallen. We'll play Elite or Delete. And we will also talk about the ratings. And I guess that's it. We're going to talk a little bit about, we'll run down the card for next week's show, of course, as we always do. But let's get it started with Elite or Delete.
Delete! Elite! Delete!
Elite!
Delete!
If you're new to the show, and I'm sure you are, this is a pretty high-level bit wherein elite means something you thought was really good from the show, and delete means something you thought was really bad from the show. We generally start with Nate on this segment. So, Nate, tell us, what was your elite pick from Fight for the Fallen?
My elite pick was a pretty controversial segment, I think. Maybe the most controversial thing on the show here. It was the Chris Jericho and Orange Cassidy angle that they ran here with the whole Inner Circle coming out, doing their, you know, comedic patter, all that shtick, and Orange Cassidy coming out and doing a bloodbath. Did I say brood or did I say blued?
You said blued for sure.
Blued, yeah.
I thought I'd made it through. Like I came right up on those words and I was like, oh, this is harder to say than you might expect. Brood, bloodbath, but with orange juice, because his gimmick is that he has the same name as the fruit, which is used to create that juice. That's the gimmick. And it was very funny. I think mostly this show had, really good wrestling that was like a little bit snake bitten. There's like all these matches were like a half step from being great, if not for like one or two little botches or moments that just didn't come across super well in the moment. And for that reason, I thought that this very broad, very sports entertainment-y, you know, I don't want to say WWE like segment, but obviously very inspired by previous WWE angles, just kind of shown the most to me. And it was executed really well. Mostly because Ortiz got drenched in orange juice and then took a big bump and swam around in it like he was Gerald Briscoe getting squirted with a beer hose or something. But it's funny because he can't swim.
Yeah, the aspect of comedy that I feel like that the Inner Circle have used over their time has been kind of remarkable in a lot of ways because, and I think you get to look at the top of the unit with Chris Jericho basically playing the aggrieved or bereaved now both of us are having issues today male like Danny McBride in the vein of like Kenny Powers and the other characters like this, and then even now reaching to a point where he's like Ignatius O'Reilly, and everyone kind of feeds off that. I feel like, I mean, I did not expect Ortiz to be like this funny of a person, and it's been an absolute delight. And then like Jericho the entire time, I mean, talking for the rest of the show about it ruined his $7,000 jacket, which is just fantastic. That looks like something he bought at a Spencer Gifts. And Ortiz swimming in orange juice, and then everything about it, like I was of the mindset at least that we had the blow off, that is it. And now it's like, okay, now we're going to have like round two happening sometime, maybe sooner rather than later. And it definitely, like, I think it's something that after the show last week, I was wondering, like, is this it for Orange Cassidy? Like, is a major thing? And, you know, it's not. And I ended up, like, I came around towards this, like, basically as soon as, like, Cassidy came out here, I felt like this angle was just complete gold.
Yeah, you know, I have complained about the comedic elements of the Inner Circle in the past, because there is a line where they just become too clownish and, you know, you forget that they're supposed to be taken seriously as like ass kickers or whatever. And maybe it's, you know, this segment in particular didn't bother me just because, you know, we just saw Jericho get a big win on TV last week and, you know, hit the guy with the bat and did all that shit, et cetera. But yeah, they've reset it enough in my mind that the comedic things did not chafe on me here. Although, and you know, it's also, there's no Mike Tyson around to be super goofy, because that appears to be just dropped. So, yeah, what'd you think, AB?
Well, I think we should address the most controversial part of this segment, which, of course, was the demo god portion of the Chris Jericho promo. So I kind of have two thoughts about the demo god. One is that it's very funny to me when Chris Jericho is just like an absolute dumbass, you know, like that's enjoyable. And it's kind of what you want out of Chris Jericho, right? This iteration of Chris Jericho. My only real issue with it is that there's like, okay, it's like when there used to be crowds at AEW, I would often complain that I thought they did things too much for the live crowd versus the TV crowd. In that there's a certain type of person who would go to the shows and they did things that all those people would understand. Like when they bring out DDP, it's like, well, does anybody watching on TV really care about DDP, for example? So on this, it's like, how many people have any fucking clue what he's talking about or what it means? Why are they injecting this into their television show for like the very small part of the audience that even understands it?
Because it rules.
I feel like the whole audience knows that they're in competition with WWE. Maybe they don't know the demo wars in particular about that wrestling war, but you know, that's kind of the fun is Chris Jericho, you know, hammering home that point because he wants to educate people about why he's better than NXT or whatever. So, it's a little specific, but I do think the audience is aware of the wrestling war.
I mean, I think that's true because it's obvious that like they're both on Wednesday night. So, I mean, I think everybody gets that they're on at the exact same time. It was a little in the weeds, but when he started, and so at first when he started, I was like, uh-oh. But then when he got into, you know, the advertisers and the Prime demo want this rematch, then it was very funny to me.
So, yes. I thought the demo god stuff was great. There was a half beat where I was like, oh no. But then that immediate reaction kind of fueled my further reflection on it and going, oh no, this is actually very funny because people are going to be extremely mad. And it is the right, and we talked about this previously, and I'll ask you about this, it's the right level of pettiness where he's just being so extra and so specific and so petty about this wrestling war and the people in his menchies. But on that topic, you had a problem when MJF the other week said, oh, you know, I drive ratings. We're in a ratings war. You thought that was not the correct level of pettiness. Is there, what differentiates those for you?
Well, one, of course, as I mentioned then, one thing that differentiates it is that I like Chris Jericho and I don't like MJF. Okay. When he first started, I did generally my thought is that it pulls AEW down to even pretend that they're in a ratings war with NXT. And some of that comes from the fact that, you know, one of the attacks people make is that, well, NXT is not even main WWE, you know? So then it's like, all right, AEW is acknowledging that they can only compete with NXT. And not with Raw or SmackDown, which of course would be insane because Raw and SmackDown are like however many decades long properties. And, you know, it's a totally different thing. But that's really my problem with it, even though I do enjoy the pettiness. And perhaps the thing that I enjoy the most is that when he said it, as you were referencing, Nate, I knew that all the dumbest people on Twitter would really hate it. And so that brought me a level of joy. That's my pettiness that I enjoy.
I mean, anything that's going to allow me to make an overly elaborate bit based on Ingmar Bergman's Seventh Seal is something that I'm going to get behind, and I'm just going to just like beat it like a dead horse because I think it's hilarious. It's something, though, that at what point do we stop calling NXT, though, the developmental brand when they've had basically everyone save Roman Reigns on that program? That when they basically based part of the WrestleMania build about, oh, if we get Charlotte back on NXT, that's going to help. Like, at what point do we drop that?
Oh, it's not a developmental show. I don't think that's a reasonable thing to argue at this point.
I just, it's something that with Jericho really should have been the only person on air, I feel like, to bring it up here, because he does have the level of pettiness that is been a central part of Chris Jericho's character since WCW, really, that he's an incredibly petty person. So the fact that he brought it up, I'm totally fine with, especially in comparison, like MJF, where it just comes off like just unlikable when he brought it up there, whereas Jericho, you're like, all right, yeah, no, Jericho, you're the demo god. You fully believe you are the demo god. After months of Joe Lanza, Brandon Thurston, and myself poring over spreadsheets, we somehow alchemically been able to divine the demo god, and that's fine. So it's something that I feel like that since it's Chris Jericho, it makes it work. Whereas with MJF, like bringing that up, it just kind of came off a little bit just missing the mark in a way.
I don't know if this is true if we look at the data, but it's also just true for Chris Jericho that his segments, you know, perform especially well. And I don't know that MJF has that same level of, you know, quarter hour appeal where him saying that, you know, you can also go, oh, well, that's stupid and cringy or whatever. But, you know, he is actually right. You know, he is beating NXT in the demo by himself or whatever. So, yeah. Also, this it's kind of easy for us to take the position of this being good, that segment being good, and the catchphrase being good. Now that we have seen the ratings and seen NXT have its worst ever demo performance. So, you know, we're kind of taking the easy way out, because if they'd come back and NXT had crawled closer and had, you know, been threatening them in the main demo, then obviously this wouldn't look as good.
The best outcome to me is that Jericho's segment lost in the demo, or at least was like below the rest of the segments on the show. I think that would be very funny.
No, that would have ruled.
All right, Mike, what's your Elite pick?
So as the most on brand person alive, my Elite pick was the trios match between the Elite and Jurassic Express. I think it's pretty well known how much I enjoy both a tag team sprint and multiple, like not two on twos, but three on threes and four on fours. And I thought this match on a show that really had some peaks and valleys, I thought this match was something really special. The idea that each week they're going to do an even more insane version of the Canadian Destroyer is something that amuses me greatly. And, you know, it's something where it's going to be interesting, I feel like, to see where, like, both of these teams go from here, because they definitely now have some character motivation, some differentiation between Kenny and the Young Bucks, which is going to be really interesting. And then the thing that's always going to that I follow and I find real interesting is, more and more, like, you're starting to see, like, how protected Jungle Boy is and, like, how particular they are with a lot of things on the program. And it just, like, all came together to be, like, my favorite tag match on the night and, you know, extremely my kind of thing. And, I mean, Kenny snapping afterwards. And also, you could do a lot of Kenny's moves look extra brutal when you're doing to someone who's 5'1" and 120 pounds and that owned. So, I love this match. This was... If it wasn't for, like, how strong the TNT title match was this week and then the 8-man last week, this probably would have been my favorite match out of this block of three special shows.
Yeah, this was really good. I, Aaron, could have jumped in. I did have a mouthful of the aforementioned maple bacon jerky, as was probably evident on cam.
I thought you were finishing up just in time and approaching to make your point.
No, I was trying to communicate that visually. But, you know, what was fun about this, I thought, is how much shine, as you mentioned, they gave to Jungle Boy. But even Marco, they gave a lot. And then Luchasaurus, you know, again, you can imagine the huge reaction that Luchasaurus's 1-on-3 comeback would have gotten in this. And this was also a match that rewards you if you're a BTE viewer or a BTE Quick Hits listener, just because they had a lot of continuity to BTE segments here, which makes sense with the three guys involved. You had, of course, Kenny is getting on the verge of snapping because he basically keeps having Colt Cabana get the best of him, and that has led to Mookie Ghana getting the best of him and Rick Knox getting the best of him, and he's basically you know, realized that he's below everybody on the roster, so it's led him to be on the verge of snapping and doing a murder. And then, of course, the long segment with Super Panda drilling Luchasaurus on how to do a Canadian Destroyer, because that would be necessary to beat the Elite. And we saw the payoff for that with Luchasaurus at least being a construction block for the Canadian destroyer, I guess. I'm not the Kenny heel turn is like they are really playing to their Reddit audience demographic, I was going to say there. I don't know. It seems like a little bit of a step backwards. It seems a little bit like, oh, well, we can't turn Paige now because we made so much hay out of Paige become this big baby face for the team. But we got to turn somebody here. So maybe let's turn Kenny. And I don't know. It just feels a little artificial.
If you're intrigued by, what are the BTE quick hits? Let me just tell you, go over to patreon.com/everythingelite. You'll find out all about them. Nate breaks down all the big vlog action for us weekly.
Yeah, we do have to come up with a better name because they're not particularly quick. The the original premise was I would just hit like story stuff out of the show. That's, you know, maybe important going forward. Now I pretty much am just doing recaps about all of them and taking it as my personal time to talk about whatever I want to, which on the most recent episode was a lot of Ricky Rockman. So, yeah, maybe need a new sort of name for the BTE segment.
Well, to be fair, AEW Lite, which is the program we're discussing, was originally supposed to be like 15 minutes, and now it's turned into basically an hour of just all three of us on our bullshit. So it's fitting that we've gone away from the plot there.
It's just extra content for our fans, that's all. So I'm just going to roll this into my elite pick, because my elite pick is the tease of a Kenny heel turn. I like this. So my thing about it is Kenny, I mean, my long-standing opinion has been that they kind of fucked up Kenny from the beginning of this promotion. So now you're at this weird point where you built him back up with the tag team with Adam Page. I thought that really worked out nicely as far as reintroducing him as like a major character, a major player. And then that all kind of got destroyed by COVID. You know, you kind of lost a lot for both of these guys. So now you need something interesting on top. You have Mox as your champion. You don't really have a lot of strong people to challenge Mox. I mean, I think every time we've talked about it, we've kind of come down to, well, maybe MJF is the next challenger. And right. I'm not sure that anybody believes MJF is quite ready to be the champion. So that seems a little soon. You have this built-in Omega Moxley feud that's already played out a little bit. So you could heat that back up with a Kenny heel turn. But more importantly, I don't think Kenny ever ends up as a heel, to be frank. But adding a little bit of intrigue to the Kenny character is nice because I feel like he hasn't had much since he's been part of AEW.
Yeah, I think that's entirely fair. And it's something that if you were to do like a tier list of AEW wrestlers and you would do it on like the face heel divide, you'd see that right now the heel side is very weak up top. And it's weak to the point of that we had to talk ourselves into Brian Cage defeating Jon Moxley yesterday. And having just the opportunity to have someone who would be like an S tier heel person that could face Jon Moxley provides a little bit more intrigue than I think like we've been getting used to along with Jon Moxley. So that's interesting. I mean, really, like, we're to a point now of Jon Moxley, and I know I'm using your point to talk about Moxley a little bit, but having someone like that in the wings and that kind of opportunity, I feel like provides a level of finality and challenge that Jon Moxley would need if Kenny was so disposed to do this. I don't know if I necessarily buy entirely into it. It does seem that other than Kenny snapping a little bit, his main character concern right now is the fact that Hangman's new friends are jerks to him. And I think that that might be the more immediate thing leading up to FTR versus Hangman and Omega. But I'm much more interested if down the line we do get to see the Omega heel turn.
Yeah, on the point of the artificiality that I mentioned of Kenny maybe teasing, you know, some heelishness here, I think it's just a symptom of the full breadth of his personality kind of being exposed to us in the BTE era and then this promotion here. And I think that's kind of what makes it feel just like a put on and we're not really going to get the, Halcyon Fuck. Did I get that? Halcyon? Halcyon days of Kenny Omega as the cleaner that, like, the Reddit people want. Like, you know, a lot of Japanese wrestling benefits from the fact that we don't know the guys all that well, and we can just, like, put Tanahashi up on a pedestal and be like, okay, all these tiny little bits of information we get about Tanahashi from, you know, the promotion's website and his interviews or whatever, feed this idea of him being, you know, a superstar. And we don't get his dumbass tweets, and we don't get his dumbass like tweets and all this shit. And we don't get him being, you know, unbelievably hammy on a YouTube show. And you kind of can't put the genie back in the bottle on that. Like, you can't get super badass Kenny Omega doing a dive into the third row and Steve Corino, you know, that everyone is longing for. Cause like, we just see him being a total goofball and doing crazy, I have to pee my pants face on BTE. And then, you know, just being who he is on Twitter. You know, it just, he's kind of exposed in that way. So like, he can be a heel, but he's just a guy playing a heel. It's like, you know, there's no aura there.
It's also something that the exact, like, cleaner, best bout, machine, heelish nature head in New Japan can't be replicated in a promotion where, like, you can't have him being going out all out for 52 weeks a year and then whatever special events as well. Like, I think part of the reason why it was such, like, a big mark was, like, every 3 months you would have this insane match. And, you know, just the nature of the programming, you can't make that happen. Like, on top of you being absolutely right about the genie can't game put back in the bottle in some fashion, or you had to take a different slant on it.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I think that's a fair point as far as the New Japan star-making machine, of course, is in rare form because they treat their guys like stars. I mean, it feels like, you know, as a New Japan still feels like how I felt watching the big American wrestlers as a kid. You know, all I knew about them was what I got from official channels. And, you know, we get a little more of that from New Japan, even the native talent, but it is very carefully handed to us. You know, we're not getting just like an all out look into their lives. So there's really something to be said for that. I mean, there's been talk, you know, for years about indie stars and like who really hangs out with the fans and, you know, glad hands with the fans versus the guys who just kind of have their match and leave, and how that helps you develop more of a star aura. And it's hard though, because there's like two different types of stars nowadays, right? Because you can be that kind of star where you're too big for everything. And then there's like the Bryan Danielson star who like everybody loves because they feel like they know him and want to root for him. And Kenny's problem, I think more so, is that he wants to be the Bryan Danielson star, but people don't actually like him as a person that much. Like he comes across as so strange that it's hard to like really be invested in whatever his real name is, the person.
Yeah. It's a weird dichotomy because on the exact same program, we have the Young Bucks, who are not really hurt by this same issue. Like they exposed every part of their lives and their children and families and all this stuff, and are also doing very goofy bits on BTE, but it hasn't hurt them. I think just because it's baked into their character, maybe, and, you know, them being like little pissants from their, you know, original time being heels on the indies. But then for Kenny, it's just, you know, he came from a different place and was on a different level, and like it just comes off differently for that reason.
But also, like, the stuff about the Young Bucks that's unlikable, they have turned into their part of their character. So you almost can't dislike them for those things.
Okay.
You know, with Kenny, I don't get the sense that like all the stuff that people bitch about Kenny, that it's like, well, he's never tried to make it into like who he is. You know, with the Bucks, it's like, yeah, we are cocky. We do think we're the best.
Yeah.
But, you know, they've kind of played that up. Where Kenny's just like a nerd, you know?
Yeah, it's just a weird authenticity thing or something where the Young Bucks do these bits and you can still understand like or get an idea of like who Matt Jackson is, even when he's doing like this protracted comedy bit. And I think, Kenny just goes so over the top that he it just removes you. He's not becoming more like Bryan Danielson, where he seems like somebody that you know and you want to root for. Yeah, it just sort of like pushes you the opposite way. And you would rather have him be unknowable in some way.
Right. I hate to keep belaboring this, but I think this is interesting and I keep thinking about things, but who the Bucks really are, or at least the people that they show us they really are, is a wrestling character, is an archetype that we can get behind. I think who Kenny Omega really is not a big, likable babyface character. So when he exposes himself, it just makes us less likely to buy into him as a big star versus what the Bucks are, if that makes any sense. That's kind
I think it's volume.
Where I come down on it. All right. Well, tell us, Nate, what your delete pick from this show is.
Okay. My delete pick is the new Demo God t-shirt on the Shop AEW store. It's just a picture of Chris Jericho, and it says Demo God above it. And it's him in his expensive $7,000 jacket. He was doing a lot of Rock stuff. Did you guys notice that? He was just quoting straight from the Rock promos about the expensive shirt and something else he said there. But we need some real statistics core art design on this t-shirt. We need graphs. We need the Show Buzz Daily Excel spreadsheet. They should have brought Mookie Ghana in on this and been like, Mookie, can you give us some correlation coefficients that we can put here on the Demo God shirt to really get over the fact that he's winning the demo?
Yeah, I just imagine if it has a giant R equals positive one on it. Just like pull full on correlation coefficient stuff. It's something where you could probably do a very big and elaborate bit if you truly want to do it about analytically figuring out what would be the most like the t-shirt that people would most likely buy for it. And then him saying like this, I've done the science studies. I have the charts to back this up here. As the demo god, this is the demo shirt. And it goes like this. Like, there's ways they could play off of that. But yeah, no, it's very similar and very samey to a lot of the other merch options. And I think that when I saw it, I was like, that's funny. But, you know, there was never even like the thought that crossed my head of that's funny enough for me to buy, even though it's a ridiculous and terrible shirt.
Yeah, the title at least should be like an Excel cell, maybe green to represent that it's above the average performance.
Right.
And that could be the demo god. Just, you know, a wealth of opportunities there that they didn't capitalize on.
Although I have to give them some credit for putting the shirt out before ratings came out. I mean, a real big
real power move. That's power right there.
Yeah. I like that. Mike, your delete pick for this week?
My delete pick for this week, and this will be one that can be proven wrong in future weeks if I turn out to be wrong about this, is Vicky Guerrero as Nyla's manager. And we've been proven wrong that some of these managers have ended up being really cool, like specifically Taz as like an old star coming back to this. But Nyla's not someone who really needed a manager to begin with. So I'm wondering, like, how are they going to make this into something that's going to benefit Nyla and help her elevation other than her point of look at how everyone else has championships after getting a manager? Like, and I mean, now you're to the extent that basically the only person with a manager without a championship, if one boils down to it, is Sean Spears. But I just don't see like Taz made an immediate thing that made his mantorship of Brian Cage work. Tully Blanchard, for however you feel about Sean Spears, it makes sense why Tully Blanchard is his manager. Arn Anderson, we have all the familiar things and like the idea that he's someone that has the history and the mind for it. What exactly is Vicky Guerrero going to be bringing to the table for Nyla Rose? She can already cut great promos. Nyla's one of the more naturally charismatic people on the roster. So what is she going to be there for other than like cheating? So we all kind of saw this coming, and it was like, I saw this is coming and I'm still disappointed. And I mean, that was kind of like my big takeaway from it, that I don't know where this is going to go. And I don't really have much enthusiasm for where it can go.
Yeah, don't really have anything positive to say about it. I guess her music is funny, but, you know, I don't know what Vicky brings to the table except being a familiar face. I don't know that, you know, teens WWE fans are going to be like, oh, Vicky's back. I got to check out AEW. it's really, I really had a fond memories of the Vicky and I don't even know, Teddy Long angles. Edge was involved.
You know, La Familia.
La Familia.
With the Edge heads.
Sure. Yeah. Don't get it. Seems unnecessary.
I mean, I'm happy for Vicky to get a payday and hopefully work for a company who will treat her a lot better than WWE did. But yeah, no, I did all my takes on this last week, I think, you know, of just kind of seeing it coming and not being excited about it. So, or perhaps that was on the Patreon. I don't know, but I have talked about it. Oh, I guess it's my turn.
Yeah. What do you hate?
I'll tell you what I hate. No Farrah Brothers on this show. It's bullshit. It irritates me, and it made me want to turn the channel. I can't believe they did so well in the demo without bringing the absolute Gen Z superstars, the Farrah Brothers, onto this show. What a letdown.
Just really just disheartening to see. Like, you're trying to give back to your community, but you don't bring in the biggest figures of the Jacksonville community. We had no Jacksonville on this show. We had no Farrah Brothers. I mean, how else are we supposed to know that they were in Duval County last night? Like, come on. You have to have them in the front row, just completely obliterated, cheering and booing. I mean, I'd much rather have them in the front row by themselves on the face side than I guess Joey Janela in a face mask the entire night. Like, let's get Eddie, and I forget what the other Farrah brother's name is, but let's get Eddie Farrah back out there. I hope Eddie Farrah is doing well, by the way.
Oh, they're doing well. Trust me. They're the Farrah brothers. All right. That's Elite or Delete. Let's talk about the ratings quickly. AEW. I mean, we've kind of referred to this already, but big jump for AEW. Higher at least than the last three that I have on this sheet. So that's up for them. From a 715 to a 788 in overall viewers. Up to fifth in the demo with a 0.29. Three straight weeks, right, at 0.28 or 0.29. So good for them in the demo. And NXT had a massive drop from 759,000 to 631,000. They had three shows that all did really well. But I'm starting to think that they blew all the big things that they had, and now they're out of ideas. Down to 49th in the demo with a 0.14. So AEW more than doubled them in the demo. Yeah, bad showing for NXT.
The demo god has been summoned. Some will burn, all will pay. We are living in the era of the demo god. And here's some stuff that I looked up for this little ratings quarter, AB, that I don't have on the run sheet, but I just wanted to let you know about like how remarkable this week was. So this was the most viewers that they've had since the Double or Nothing Fallout episode on May 27th, and this is their highest performing demo week since then. This was the last week of the challenge, so that's going to be this. And this was against pretty, like, this was a competitive night on Wednesday, the 15th. We had a UFC fight card. It was from Fight Island, but it was considered kind of a lower-tier card that they beat outright. There was the NASCAR All-Star Race at the lovely Bristol Motor Speedway that completely that AEW did pretty well with. And I mean, the true brutal opponent, I know, Nate, you were always like, it's going to be NBA versus AEW. But we've learned that the true brutal opponent for AEW is Guy's Grocery Games. AEW vanquished Guy Fieri this week. And just to like put a little cherry on top of it, just like how remarkable a week this was, just like the sub demos of 0.02 for NXT's men from between the age of 12 and 34, AEW 10 times that sub demo, which is, that's a scary thing and a pretty remarkable thing for AEW. And then people 18 to 34, AEW tripled. So remarkable night. All hail the demo god. May destruction come swiftly to their enemies.
Have to agree with that. You know, I'm trying to come up with a joke here about, I understand from Shift F1 that Guy Fieri hates eggs. No. I think I understand that. What show did I hear that on? I don't know, but he hates eggs, right?
Sure.
Anybody with me on this?
No.
I guess he'll like go, you know, he goes around the places and eats at their fucking restaurants or whatever.
Sure, yeah.
And he'll be like, okay, I want this, but I don't want egg on it. And sometimes I guess the person will just be like, sorry, dude, it fucking comes with egg. So, and he will just like pick it up and take it off or whatever. Very funny. What a weird guy. Anyway,
well, you nailed that joke.
AEW, all egg wrestling, I guess, is where I'm going with this.
Okay. So there was actually a joke. Okay.
There we go. Yeah. Proud of you.
AB's joke of the week.
Joke of the week.
All right.
So think about sound bites to drop in on the show.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll work on that. Okay. Fight for the Fallen, run down the whole show. We opened up with the TNT championship match, the open challenge that, of course, we learned Tony Khan picks the opponents for. Very open challenge. Cody defeated Sunny Kiss with the Crossroads.
Yeah, this match owned. Oh, go ahead, Nate.
That's all.
Okay. No, this match owned. I thought that Sunny, like seeing where Sunny was on the pre-show for Fight for the Fallen last year and seeing him progress to like getting a title match and having one of the better TNT title defenses, I thought that this they really brought it. And I thought Sunny took like a huge step forward and you could definitely see like after a while of like Sunny Kiss and how he was booked like this, you were like, okay, he has something, but I wonder if it's ever going to break out. This could have ended up being his breakout performance. And this is something that 3 years ago, from 3 years from now, when we do like this is Sunny Kiss, this will be one of like the big matches and turning points I feel like we'll talk about.
Yeah, this was really good. These open challenges have been good, I think, in giving some of their like tag team guys or undercard people just a little bit of an opportunity to show like, hey, I'm like pretty talented in my own right. You should maybe keep an eye on me. And that's a good way to just sort of have some investment in your Sunny Kisses and your Mark Quinns going forward. There was a really annoying thing. I'm very over the Arn Anderson bit. Cody comes out at the beginning of this match and he's like being a dick and kind of heelish and, you know, attacking as soon as the bell rings and this shit. And, you know, basically, you know, having his way with Sunny Kiss because of that. And then Arn stops him outside and he's like, hey, get your head out of your ass. You're going to lose or whatever because you're being a dick and you're not thinking. And him doing this causes Sunny Kiss to get the advantage on Cody and take control of the match. It's just like, okay, so he's, I don't know, what's the point of your coach there? It seems like pretty bad advice.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the Arn Anderson part sucks really bad. The cool part about this to me was just, I mean, getting a really good showing of how far Sunny Kiss has come from the beginning of this promotion. I don't know what Sunny's doing to work on his craft, but it's obviously going really well. I hope that others in the promotion are going along with whatever Sonny's doing, you know, to get so much better. I think the thing that's going to separate Sonny eventually is once he gets things a little smoother, like when he can transition between moves a little quicker, from spot to spot a little quicker. But he's made so much progress on that. If you go back and watch that Sunny Kiss, Brandon Cutler, or Peter Avalon match from the first Fight for the Fallen and see how much smoother Sunny is now. I mean, it's out of this world. You know, Mike was the one who really was really behind Sunny from the very beginning, you know, even as early as that match. And I think I wasn't sure he could even be as good as he is now. And it's just, you can see now that I can see now that he's going to be an absolutely huge star. He should be.
They had a lot of shots of Tully scouting during this match, which again is also going to annoy me because Tully is managing Sean Spears, but they obviously are, you know, hinting or, you know, teasing or trying to swerve us on the idea of Cody and some Tully involvement.
Well, they're definitely trying to tell us that Cody and Sean Spears and FTR is going to be the four horsemen.
Well, I don't know, because we also see FTR palling around with Hangman.
Yes.
You know, it seems like Sean Spears would be the odd man out there, but he just gave him the famous glove.
Yes.
So
that Barry Windham also wore.
Yeah. Legendary.
Yeah.
Automatically makes me super invested in Mr. 10, Sean Spears.
Next up, FTR defeated the Lucha Brothers. Dax, I think, rolled up Fenix.
Yeah, it was Dax who did the mask rip. And
yes. Yeah. And then let me just quickly go through the post-match, and then we can talk about everything all together. FTR, Butcher and the Blade. FTR is still in the ring. Butcher and the Blade are out by, you know, the FTR truck that they stole. They're taunting each other back and forth. The Bucks come up behind Butcher and Blade.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card. But with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club Slab Pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading, so you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, setting these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet, arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio, and then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They're on standby for you 24/7 so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy video lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived. And really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy video lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition. 1 second, door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
They give him a double super kick. Kenny comes out, but like from backstage more. The Bucks, I guess, get the keys from the truck and take them into the ring to hand them to FTR. Kenny has a cooler. He hands them beers. They have taken a Sharpie to the beer cans to mark out the light logo. They should have just put an E next to it. I don't know why they didn't think of that. Then it could have been Elite Beer. That would have been good. Just thought of that. That's AB's joke of the week, part two.
AB's joke of the week, part two.
It looks like they're all going to drink the beers together, which is a little weird. Kenny, you know, a famous non-drinker. But instead, FTR pours their beers on Kenny's head. Kenny gets very mad. FTR goes to their truck, but they cannot get it started.
Yeah. And that was another little hiccup they had. Penta and Phoenix had a little hiccup doing one of their double team moves right at the beginning of this. This was pretty much what I expected. There was a lot to like here. You didn't really get the story of, oh, we're going to do a Southern style tag and not going to do all this fast paced modern wrestling stuff or whatever it is that their gimmick is. I thought it was a pretty, pretty clever finish. Gave a little bit of coverage to the Lucha Brothers, but still kept FTR strong. It was a successful segment in that regard. You know, I don't think it had achieved any dream match levels or anything.
Yeah. I actually, after the Vicky thing, this probably would have been my delete of the week just because of there were a lot of things that I feel like that production-wise they made basically all four guys there look like complete like assholes, for lack of a better word. The car not starting and then not like cutting to the table and being like, oh, the car's not starting. Take camera this one, just because it made them look like dorks. And then the fact that like Phoenix got unmasked and they tried to, it felt like that they didn't clue in people. And you basically saw Phoenix unmasked like for the various things. They didn't have like a towel or something like this. And you didn't call DQ on a mask grip. Like, come on. Like, this is, it's one of those things that like I wish they kind of would have done, or they make that a point of the fact that that actually is something that you get DQ for doing in Mexico, even in AAA for a mask grip. So that,
I
was,
mean, it shouldn't that, be my a frustration DQ, is the match though, right?
Oh, it is. It absolutely should be.
Well, we're not DQ in Mexico. The promotion can set their own rules.
I think they should DQ, do no DQs for kicking too much ass, but DQ for mask grips. That's completely irresponsible. They're masked. Like your district, that's like, would you say like a mask grip is like one of the more disrespectful things you could do to like in the ring to like a mask wrestler?
Sure, but you know, do disrespectful things in wrestling all the time. So it's not, you know, if it, we're pretending that it's a actual sporting contest and one guy is wrestling in a shirt and the other guy rips his shirt off, it's not a disqualification. You just remove part of his gear.
But in other actual sporting events, when you interfere with like their equipment or like things like this, you do get called on it. Like that, there is things like,
yeah,
this,
but
like
it's not
holding
essential equipment. It's like
it is very essential equipment. It's part of their identity.
No, it hides their identity, but it's not essential to the
it forms
the
their
performance
identity
of wrestling. Yeah, I mean, you know, in a real sport, you wouldn't have masked competitors. So. Yeah, I mean, if they can make the call that it's not going to be a DQ, they just have to be consistent with that going forward, which is, it's kind of, I thought, a clever finish because it was the old, you know, oh, we have different rules for throwing a guy over the top rope. It's a disqualification under this set of rules and not a disqualification under this set of rules. And they can sort of use that to half-ass fix their way out of a finish. So, yeah, I thought it was kind of clever. They can be like, oh, well, you know, Lucha Brothers, they would have won this match in Mexico, but in under AEW rules, FTR wins.
Okay, here's my take. I'm not wading into the mask waters, but here's my take. FTR, Lucha Brothers, Young Bucks, Hangman and Page, Butcher and the Blade. Who are the good guys? There's nobody to root for in this story.
The Young Bucks are good guys. The Elite's good guys. Hangman Page, you've argued strongly, is a huge good guy.
Yeah, but then
Omega did like one slightly heelish thing on this show.
Yeah, but it's like, but in the story that they're telling, who are they trying to show us as like we're supposed to root for them? Because like the Young Bucks are kind of dicks to FTR. I mean, Matt Jackson came out last week and like cut a dickish promo on FTR. They try to have it both ways with most of these teams, with Lucha Brothers, with Young Bucks, with FTR, Hangman and Page. And there's not a single team for us to be like, oh, we've got to really get behind them and hope they win. It's just a story that is nonsensical to me.
Well, the Bucks are a special case that I would pull completely out of this because, as I've argued a lot, in their core, they are heels, but they're cheered for being who they are. So like subtextually, like they don't really apply here because no matter what, they're going to be seen as faces, at least in theory, by an audience. Like, and that's always been the case for the Young Bucks, pretty much dating from like 2013. Like, they are heels, but the crowd loves them for being heels. So, but like everyone else on this, like the most aggrieved party in all this should be FTR because they have had their truck stolen for about a month, and they finally get their hands on people who helped steal the truck, and now they got their keys back. But they're assholes. Everyone else, like, there's no. Like, this is something that if, like, Private Party was really on the up and up, they would be, like, the babyface team here, right?
Yeah, I mean, they have, you know, Sonny and Janela's babyface team, Lucha Express's babyface team.
Yeah, I just mean in this story.
Yeah, no, I know. Yeah, and the top people, and I think this has been a theme throughout the promotion, they just don't make a sharp distinction. They want to have it, like you said, both ways and do shades of gray or whatever. And it's varying degrees of success throughout. You know, the Page stuff was really interesting and really fun, and he caught on as a big baby face in that way. Mike's totally right that the Young Bucks, like, and Kenny Omega really became beloved because they were being snarky dicks and, you know, kind of bad guys or whatever, but and turned baby face in that way. I Lucha Brothers, Butcher and the Blade are for sure heels. I think the Elite is meant to be faces, especially without Cody. And the FTR is just like a chaos element.
Yeah, I just don't like it. I just think it's a bad story. I think they're doing a bad job telling whatever story they're trying to tell. Next up, the Inner Circle came out. They're drinking orange juice. They're celebrating the big win over Orange Cassidy. Jericho says last week he had one of the best matches in AEW history against Orange Cassidy. Not only did he win the match, he won the ratings war as well. He schools us all on the 18 to 49. Demo says he's never been beaten in that demo because he is the king of ratings, the demo god. Then he talks about how everybody is saying they love the match, saw something in orange they'd never seen before. Everybody wants a rematch. And he says we aren't getting a rematch because Orange had his chance. He did good, but not good enough. The fans start chanting that Chris Jericho is scared. It's the first time we've had like a response to the crowd moment in a promo in a long time. Jericho says the demo god is never scared. Now Orange can go back to hugging his best friends and remembering what it's like to be a main eventer. He pours a drink of orange juice out for Orange's dead career. Orange's music hits. He emerges from the concourse. Jericho tells him, you did good. You showed you can go, but you don't have what it takes because you're lazy and you have a bad attitude. So there will never be a rematch. You can take your sunglasses off, fold them up, shove them straight up your ass and get the hell out of my arena. That was definitely a rock.
Yeah, yes. He took all that straight from the rock.
Yes. Orange does not leave. And instead, Orange does the thumbs up and then the thumbs down in just a brutal move.
Of course, he took that right from Batista.
Yes.
Or Sami Callihan, take your pick.
And Jericho says, what are you going to do, Orange? And that's when orange juice spills. from the rafters down on the inner circle. Jericho says, this jacket costs $7,000. Somebody throw me a towel, but it's an Orange Cassidy towel. This, it sounds dumber than it felt.
It is. I mean, it's for sure dumb. It felt dumb, but it was just the right side of dumb for me on this particular night. You know, sometimes it hits for you and sometimes it doesn't.
Yes. All right. The Jurassic Express is backstage with Alex Marvez. Marco Stunt thought the Inner Circle getting doused in orange juice was very funny. Luchasaurus does the dumb dinosaur thing that he does. And that leads into the Elite defeating Jurassic Express. Kenny pinned Marco Stunt after a one-winged angel and a particularly brutal-looking one-winged angel. After the match, Kenny started beating down Marco and the Bucks had to stop him. And Kenny did a video game anime bad guy face. Okay. Hikaru Shida is backstage with Alex Marvez. She's got her AEW heels shirt on. I've got one myself that I keep, you know, just in case I'm going to be on the win a date with Hikaru Shida game.
I mean, now you have something that you can say, like, you have the shirt, I have the shirt. You know, you might get a leg up in the game that way.
Right, we've got something in common. You know?
There you go. Yeah.
Alex Marvez says, four of the top five women are out for various reasons. That includes Yuka Sakazaki, I assume.
Is she still ranked? I'm going to check to see if Yuka Sakazaki is still ranked. I've not checked in a while, but this is genuinely my favorite thing about the rankings is if Yuka Sakazaki is still ranked.
So Alex asks if she's ready to have a rematch with Nyla, I guess. That's the only person left. Sheeta says, sure, but it doesn't have to be Nyla. And she puts out a challenge for any woman to wrestle her. She basically says, there's so few, we have so few women now that I'll take on anybody.
Guys, I have some really bad news.
Don't tell me this.
Yuka Sakazaki is not ranked in the AEW's women's division any longer. Apparently, the amount of inactivity you're allowed to have is about 5 months.
Tell us, what's the top five?
I was already searching to see when she got taken off the rankings, but the top five in the AEW women's division are Nyla Rose at 7-2 is number one. Big Swole at 5-3 is number two. Penelope Ford at 4-4 is number three. Chris Statlander at 4-4 is number four. And Dr. Britt Baker, DMD, is 4-4 and in fifth place, is ranked fifth.
Okay. So only Penelope, I guess, is... Well, no. So that's fucking wrong. Four of the five aren't out.
No, yeah.
Well, is Swole suspended or was that just last week?
I have not heard. We've not had the committee meeting saying if she's back or not. But also, I mean, not only do you have like that, I mean... That's making the supposition that Penelope Ford and Nyla Rose are both unable to wrestle. Like three of the top five as of that happened. Let me look at last week's rankings to see if they changed it because she did say in that ranking.
She should wrestle Rebel. That's what
Rebel. I mean, well, absolutely. Stardom veteran. Rebel.
We all know who she's about to wrestle. The legend.
Have a pretty good idea.
Yeah. The legend, Eva Lise.
Could be a good match.
Be careful.
It's going to be something.
Listen closely.
All right.
Eva Lise is good.
Oh,
that's right.
Wow.
I said it.
We will finally find out if Trevor, the Irish wrestling fan, listens to this podcast.
Or the bad boy, Casey.
That's right.
I think we've referenced Trevor pretty explicitly enough previously that we would have found out by now. I think we can say that he does not.
By the way, guys, Yuka Sakazaki was finally removed from the rankings on Wednesday, June 17th. So that was like 6 months after her most recent match. So that's, I'm not part in charge of rankings. I just helped decide titles. So that's beyond me.
Very sad for the magical girl, but a really good promo here from Shida in English. You really have to be impressed by Shida's skills here.
I mean, Hikaru Shida rules.
She does.
Like in it, and we get to, she's the first person since Pentagon to get to go say she wants to be shown this. Show Hikaru Shida that you could come after her. So I enjoyed it a lot.
Then we had a Jon Moxley promo. He says the last few weeks haven't gone well. He's very upset. Tonight he gets to get his frustrations out by hitting and being hit. He says you can't take anything for granted. Tonight he's got a hell of a challenge coming from Brian Cage. And according to Technique by Taz, he won't be able to do a paradigm shift because Cage is too big. He says, fine, he'll just rip his surgically repaired bicep in two.
Was like, oh, yeah, hey, it's nice to have somebody who's off TV and you like miss them, and then they come back and you're like, oh yeah, okay, cool. I get to see Jon Moxley do his little thing now. It's like novel. Yeah.
I love Jon Moxley's ability to, for the last 15 years, to find a just a construction area in every town he's in to cut a promo against. So I think that's a good trope that wherever they go after everything, you need to find like a construction site for Jon Moxley to cut a promo at. That's his established aesthetic. But yeah, Moxley's usually someone who's very hit or miss with me with promos. And I feel like this was a pretty solid one in the build-up for the match and became pretty important for the world title match.
Next up, the Nightmare Sisters, Brandi Rhodes and Allie, defeated MJ Jenkins and Kenzie Page. Allie pinned MJ. I think this is the first time seeing MJ Jenkins since she was released from NXT.
Yes.
After the match, Dustin did not want to raise Allie's hand, but he did.
Just like very annoyed that the bunny has been dropped. Just no acknowledgement. You know, obviously this is a story that is going somewhere, or at least relationship that we think is going somewhere. But the Butcher and the Blade seem to be other eyes occupied. They're not worried about Dustin and QT. So, you know, what is the aim here of the bunny just insinuating herself into this weird unit?
Because QT,
nice gear, though. Very good gear.
Because QT is a dumb guy who thinks that he has a chance with this person who's obviously married, and she's just going to take him for a ride. So good for Allie, you know, QT.
I mean, is she taking his millions of dollars? What's the aim of her ride?
She got him to buy a brand new Corvette. Was it a Corvette or a Mustang? I'm sorry, I'm not a car guy.
She also got the Nightmare Family jacket out of it.
Yeah, I mean, Nightmare Family. Yes, this happened on Dark. They've promoted the best thing from Dark onto the main show, and I'm very pleased.
I mean, maybe Pepper Parks is like looking ahead to getting a hold of QT's wrestling school. You know, he's trying to plan out his post wrestling career, and maybe that's what it is. He's going to get Allie's name on the lease.
There we go.
I got nothing, man. It's weird because QT is like, so QT like maybe had COVID a few weeks ago. Right. And
oh no, he had it, but he was, according to DEP, he was only sick for 3 days.
Yeah, so, but the time has passed. We haven't seen him back on. I can only believe that he hasn't. Well, he has to have tested negative by now. So I don't know where he is. That story's not happening, but we're continuing on with the Nightmare Sisters. The previously mentioned friend of the show, Trevor, the Irish wrestling fan, suggests Brandy's getting more control in the women's division again. I don't know what's happening.
You did update your spreadsheet, though, right?
I did. If you're a patron, you've heard my lengthy breakdown of the power struggle over the women's division, and you know it's up in the air right now of who's pulling the strings. Speaking of the women's division, Nyla was out next with Dasha. Nyla says she's not going to tell anyone anything about her manager. She's going to let that person say it themselves. It's Vicky Guerrero. She hits the famous catchphrase that everybody loves: "Excuse me." Dasha asks Vicky what her strategy is. Vicky asks, why would she tell anyone her strategy? But since she's Nyla's manager, now she has a message for the women's locker room. Stop lying to yourself about how good you are. You'll never be smart enough to cheat to win. Nyla is going to steal every opportunity you've ever dreamed of. I'm finishing all of them like that on this show.
Vicky's theme's a banger. That's like the only positive I have, is that Vicky's theme goes.
I mean, yeah, I guess what they're going to do here is just have Vicky help her be more nefarious, right?
Yeah, but it's kind of not the role she should be doing anyway, because she's the monster heel. Like, her thing, she's larger and she crushes everyone and has superior strength and all this stuff.
She's been the fucking champion. I mean, it's not like she can't get to the top of the mountain, you know?
I will accept this relationship if and only if the way she exploits Vicky as her manager is just she uses her as a weapon, and like she pulls Vicky into the ring and like throws her at Riho or whatever, and just uses her as a battering ram or a javelin of some kind. That would be acceptable to me. Everything else is a downgrade.
Try to figure out how she can make that top rope leg drop more frog splash like to play on the Guerrero thing, but it's already cool enough as the leg drop. Yeah, I don't know. This is probably not going to be good.
Yep.
In the main event, Jon Moxley defeated Brian Cage. I should have included this before the match. Before the match, Taz had a promo. He said, you know, you're out here chirping that Brian Cage isn't 100%. While you were sitting at home with your little wifey, this guy was wrestling a full schedule. Then John Moxley won. Taz threw in the towel while Moxley had Cage in an armbar. Let's talk about the match first, and then we'll talk about the post-match.
Yeah, I've kind of come to like a realization that as much as I enjoy John Moxley as a character, when he's not wrestling with a lot of plunder, I'm not as interested. Like this turned out to be a decent match, but it just was something that like there was like all the arm work that it made sense that he brought up like the surgically repaired bicep, but I was just kind of like checked out of that at that point. And then it turned out to be like pretty like I liked the idea that Taz, of course, is going to have Cage's best interest, and he doesn't want him to like get his arm re-injured, so he threw in the towel. Like I like that justification, and I think that shows Taz being a very smart manager. But the match itself, it wasn't for me. Like I love sprints and I love plunder, and this sadly was neither of that.
Yeah, I guess I in theory liked the finish. You know, they gave us enough justification for why Taz would throw the towel in. If there's anything you want to say about Cage, you could probably say that, oh, he's injury prone. And, you know, they hammered that home in the promo earlier with Moxley. Of course, it makes sense that Taz would have a towel to throw in because he always wears a towel. He, of course, invented towels. So that all fit perfectly. It gives you a little bit of coverage to say, oh, well, Cage didn't tap out. He didn't get pinned. He's still the FTW champion. He's still a big deal, etc. It just felt, you know, too cued by half doing this and the mask removal finish on the same show. It's like you have two clever cheat finishes to get out of beating somebody clean. If you do them on the same show at the same time, they just each one means a little less. That's an ongoing theme. Maybe this show was meant to be last week, so you wouldn't have that problem, or this match was meant to be last week rather, so you wouldn't have that problem. It was refreshing to see John Moxley, like I said, and thought the match was competent.
Can you just throw any towel into the ring during a pro wrestling match, and that means you're giving up on behalf of the wrestler that with which you are aligned?
You have to have a existing alignment. You have to register with the office that you are aligned with this person. I think first.
It's very dumb because, like in boxing, there's a reason. Like there's always a towel there. You know, the corner man has this towel because they're going to use it to wipe the guy, you know, in between rounds or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then here in wrestling, it's just like, this person randomly had a towel. So we just worked it into the story and threw it in. I don't know. It's a little ad hoc for me.
I think it's like a sort of charming, weird wrestling thing that they took it directly from boxing without really examining the purpose of it. And that's like a weird wrestling idiosyncrasy like so many of the other ones.
Yeah, and it's existed now for so long that people are like, oh yeah, and you throw in the towel. Like that's a turn of phrase that's used. Like when just as easily Taz could say, we forfeit, and as a manager he'd be able to forfeit the match.
Yeah, he could go to the no longer goth ring girl and ring bell girl and just tell her, you know, ring the bell.
Right. Also works, you know, better visually for television or people in the rafters to have a flying object. Yeah.
That's
right,
true.
Yeah. And the fact that it's like a bright orange towel, like pops on the camera.
I actually, if the story becomes that Taz throws a towel in rather than let Cage ever take a loss, then I love it. Like imagine Cage is on a two count and Taz throws the towel in rather than count three. I think that's brilliant.
Okay, that I would really like.
Oh, I think that's what they should do. Like for seriously, and say like the FTW title, like he does like one of his wildcat
defenses. Never been pinned,
defenses.
Never submitted.
Yeah, he does it like one of the wildcat title defenses of the FTW title, and he throws in the towel against someone. It's like, no, the title belt does not change hands on forfeit. Does not change hands on this. Like you could really like rules lawyer this into something really funny.
Yeah, it takes a one-winged angel, and he's got a two count, and then the towel lands on Omega's head.
Exactly.
This is a money heel actor.
Then the babyface would be entirely pissed because they feel like that they were cheapened out of the win because they want to get like the win to prove that they're best. Like, this is easy booking, guys. Like, TK, slide in our DMs. We have just figured out how Brian Cage be booked for the next year.
After the match, Taz hit Mox. Is that right? Did Taz hit Mox with the FTW title? Or did Cage hit Mox with the FTW title?
Card says Taz hits Mox.
Oh, I know that's what I wrote, but I'm wondering if that is actually what happened.
Well, I'm relying on you here.
So what happened was Taz hit Mox with the FTW title. Then it had to be fucking Brian Cage because then he attacked him. Had to be Brian Cage. Anyway, the lights went out. When the lights come back, we see Darby Allin. He's on the top rope. He's got a skateboard. He jumps off and hits Brian Cage with the skateboard.
Yeah, makes sense. You know, they were building this story, you know, before the title challenge and everything. So, thoughts on doing the lights out return with no crowd?
Yeah, very dumb without a crowd. Yeah.
Just kind of cringe. You're like, oh yeah, we're back doing this again. Okay. Like when he could like come in from like outside and jump in the ring and be just as effective.
It is. Every time I've yet to learn that I should not be excited for the lights out, but I still do. My mind races. The lights go out and I go, oh, who could it be? Like, and I, you know, just start pulling. Oh, it's fucking Tyson or something, you know, just start pulling from the deepest off the board choices.
I mean, like the natural one is lights go out and Sabu's there.
I mean, that would have been appropriate and I would have lost my fucking mind. Sabu is less canceled than Darby at this point, I think. So, you know, it would have been less problematic if it was Sabu. And yeah, now I'm really upset that didn't happen.
I don't know. You get pretty excited about things, but I really like, that's like something I don't expect out of Nate to be like, oh shit, what's about to happen? Like, I really like that idea. That's fun for me. Now I want him to do lights out every show.
Yeah, but then, you know, I'm gonna unlearn that behavior through this television show.
Hasn't happened yet, Nate.
We're getting there. I mean, when they did Orange was a delivery. They delivered on the lights out promise when it was Orange.
Yes, that's true.
Other than that, it's been the Dark Order and...
Yeah. They've loved turning the lights out in this promotion, that's for sure. All right, if you enjoy the show, you've enjoyed all the free episodes that we've put out, and you'd like to support the show in some way, you can do that by going to patreon.com/everythingelite. We've got three tiers at which you can subscribe, and in exchange, you'll get a lot of bonus audio. We do lots of shows every month, including a weekly Dynamite preview that also includes the BTE not-so-quick hits, where Nate breaks down all the big vlog action from around the world. And this past week on Monday, we dropped a Fight for the Fallen retrospective. We looked back at last year's Fight for the Fallen and then previewed this year's show. It's a lot of fun for me. I hope for the listeners to go back and kind of see what's happened over the last year. And it's just a good reminder of some things, like realizing that Sonny Kiss had been in that, like the opening buy-in match. And now you get to see him, yeah, still in the opening match, but in a title match only 1 year later. It's just fun to be able to tell those stories.
Didn't shout out that they had the Roar of the Jaguar return also. And that was a fun detail.
That's right. No Jackson DeVille, as Mike mentioned, but we did have the Roar of the Jaguar.
Can't believe no Jackson DeVille. He must be still healing.
I was going to say he's selling Jericho's Judas Effect.
Yeah, he's still, of course. He's still almost 2 months later selling the Judas Effect.
We've got, a few weeks left in this month, so we got a few more ideas for what will be out this month. I'm not promising that this will come out this month, but there is a new episode of The Errands coming soon. Aaron Taub is back from assignment and hopefully victorious again. And we've got a new idea for a gimmick for how we're going to do The Errands going forward. So look forward to that. Also, make sure if you're a Patreon subscriber or if after hearing this, you run and subscribe to the Patreon, to also join our Discord. If you join at the $5, $8 tier, you can connect Patreon to Discord, and then you'll pop right up into our channel. We do voice chats during Dark, during Dynamite, and we're just kind of always around there to chat a little bit. So that's patreon.com/everythingelite. Next week on Dynamite, here's what we know. We're going to get Hangman Page versus 5 Allen Angels. Ivelisse makes her long-awaited AEW debut to take on Diamante. MJF is going to be in action. We're going to have
Wardlow.
With Wardlow, that's right. I'm sorry. Sorry, Mike. I didn't mean to disrespect War in his name.
I mean...
I know.
If you're not going to bring up the fact that MJF's with Wardlow, then what are we even doing here?
That's true. That's true. He is the main part of that act. There's going to be a Falls Count Anywhere match. The Young Bucks taking on The Butcher and The Blade. And the Jurassic Express team of Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy will take on Chris Jericho and Jake Hager.
After Butcher and The Blade's wrestling career has finished, I hope they open a bed and breakfast.
Yeah,
that they have like a butcher shop on the side that they're able to, like, for your breakfast, provide like a nice like country ham, I guess, turkey bacon, or just bacon jerky. You know, I mean, this is an interesting show. Like, I'm really stoked to see Paige versus Five Allen Angels. I think that's going to be something that would be really a whole lot of fun, and we'll get have more discourse about how much of a match that Allen Angels takes. And this will be an interesting match. Interesting show. I'd be interested to see, because it looks like there probably will still be one or two more matches. And you know what's going to be next for Moxley? What's going to be next for Cody? I mean, there's a lot of ways to go for this.
Shouts to Diamante for tweeting recently that the women only get 5-minute matches at AEW, tagging Kenny Omega in the tweet, and still getting another booking.
Getting another booking and then having a show that had like 3 women segments on it when they've been very, very lackluster with the percentage of women's participation on the show.
Watch Diamante lose in 4 minutes, 59 seconds now.
I gotta say, if I'm Tony Khan or Kenny Omega or whoever is agenting this, there is no fucking chance it's going over 5 minutes. Not a chance. But I'm a very petty person, as we discussed earlier. Yeah, it looks like a good show. Mike and I will preview that on AEW Lite next week on the Patreon. So subscribe and listen to that. What's all my other stuff I usually say? If you want to get in touch with us at Everything AEW, I'm at Aaron Like the Car. Nate is at Epitasis. Mike is at Fuji Heya. Subscribe to the podcast. Give us a 5-star rating. And a review on the Apple Podcasts app. And check out patreon.com/everythingelite. Anything else, guys, before we go?
I mean, just everything.
No.
Yeah, no, everything, Aaron.
We just did the whole show, man.
Everything.
I mean, what's your feeling about the Seventh Seal?
You're going to out me as a fake film boy. Never seen Seventh Seal.
Don't know that anybody was accusing you of being a film
boy. No. I never would have thought. That's not the first thought to describe you is a film boy. So.
I mean, I know some films.
You know some films.
I know a few films.
I know you do
the the New Year's Eve film marathons.
Yeah, but that's for like goofy shit.
Oh, okay.
But
what was on your last year's New Year's Eve film marathon? Like, maybe I'm being a bad friend, but I did not know you do a film marathon every New Year's Eve.
Yeah, New Year's. Well, we didn't do it this year because we were in Japan.
Naturally.
Well, we kind of did because we were on the flight. We actually did.
That's true. We watched on the flight. I watched Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Okay.
Hustlers.
All right.
And actually, then I think I watched Senna, which was not really.
I mean, Senna's a great movie.
Yeah, but we usually kind of watch some of the bigger like blockbusters or like goofy movies that we think will be fun, you know, from that year.
Keep it themed.
Looks like in 2017, we did Get Out, Ingrid Goes West, Baby Driver, and The Big Sick.
Real goofy movies right there.
Yeah.
Now, do you have a log of this? Or are you looking at old tweets or what's
I'm looking at old tweets, yeah.
Okay.
Looking at old, I keep a spreadsheet of what we watch each New Year's. This past year, we did Crazy Rich Asians, Game Night, Ocean's 8? I do not remember watching that.
I did. Ocean's 8 was sneaky good.
And Blockers was the last one.
Okay. I think I watched Ocean's 8 maybe on the flight to Japan because I'd gone to see it in theaters and then the projector went out like in the last 15 minutes of the movie, so just the whole fucking climax and finale I missed. So I put it back on the flight, I think.
Okay.
Look, Anne Hathaway.
Yeah, I'm remembering it now. There's like a big party that they go to right at some point, and
it's the Met Gala.
Yeah. My tweet says, "Let me tell you about Ocean's 8, friends. There was a heist, a rollicking good time."
Rollicking good time.
I think longtime EE listeners know that I love any sort of heist movie.
I don't think I knew that. I wouldn't have pegged you as a heist boy.
Yeah, we talked. Remember the Baby Driver? I mean, it was probably, you know, before that when I did the December of 18 marathon, because we talked about bank robberies and Nick Gage, etc.
Right. Well, everybody loves a bank robbery, so you're not alone there.
Blockers. What was that about?
That was the John Cena
juvenile delinquency film.
Yeah, it was the one that Cena is a dad and he's trying to prevent his daughter from having teenage sex.
Yeah, that was funny. I liked that. Game Night, I wrote, was a perfect NYU marathon choice. Not great, but fun. I want to see Jason Bateman in a Terrence Malick film. I stand by that.
Jason Bateman's had a weird run.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just imagining, like, I think he eats up too much scenery to be a Malick boy. I don't think that he, like, and he doesn't do, like, ethereal that well.
I mean, he's right, not like Ben Affleck.
He's not, I would not describe Jason Bateman as ethereal. I'm very with you there.
I mean, have you ever watched Ozark? I think he plays he plays the same character now in every single movie he's in. So, like, I can't see, like, transposing that into, like, Tree of Life, but instead of Sean Penn, it's him. I can't see that.
Okay,
well, I would say he's much less ethereal than the Great Khali.
I mean,
I mean, if we're talking about scenery eaters, you know, Sean Penn is one.
But Sean Penn does it in a way that you could definitely see it working with Malick versus Jason Bateman is just like every single character he's played since Arrested Development is a variant of Michael Bluth.
Oh yeah, he's only ever played one character, that's for sure. But I think he's an excellent actor, Jason Bateman.
Is he, though, if he only plays one character?
Yes.
I kind of think everybody on Arrested Development is bad and everything except Arrested Development.
I think Jason Bateman is really good. Like, he has this ability. The way that he delivers lines, it always feels so insanely natural. He's, like, great at the idea of, like, wrestling with something that he's trying to say and just like barely being able to kind of spit it out. Like, I think he's really fucking good. He's a very natural actor.
I'm going to push back on Nate's Arrested Development comment because Jessica Walter is a fantastic voice actor.
Okay, voice acting doesn't really count.
That's not acting.
Okay.
All right. Mike getting fired up.
No, I think that voice acting is a different like skill in your skill set to be able to do voiceover work and be able to do voice acting. I think Jessica Walter, like, she does kind of play Jessica Walter in a lot of her voice acting roles, but I think she has a very like distinctive voice that I think is very complimentary when she does voice acting.
I want to be clear that I have no fucking clue who Jessica Walter is.
She plays the mom.
Never watched it.
She was on Dynasty.
If you like Jason Bateman doing naturalistic incredulity and being unable to come up with what to say next, you should probably watch Arrested Development, which is just that for like four seasons.
He's like, as everybody knows, I'm a big Up in the Air fan. He's great in Up in the Air.
That I did know. Was that a Patreon episode where we talked about that at length?
Yes. Yeah. We did because I'm pro Michael Clayton and anti Up in the Air.
And I'm anti Michael Clayton and pro Up in the Air. So it's just, there's two kinds of people in the world. You can't be anything else. What else do I like? I mean, it got pretty goofy, but I like the Ozark. It's good.
I'm off Ozark. I got off like, when it got to a certain point where it looked like that every image was like shot with like three full blue gels on each light, I was like, I can't handle this anymore.
Yeah, but for me, it's like, what the fuck else am I going to do? I've already watched like two seasons of this. I might as well just keep watching it.
No, nothing's more powerful than just stop watching shows. Everyone, just stop. Like, as soon as you feel like,
just stop watching all shows.
Just stop watching it. Like, stop watching it. Go on YouTube. Go watch like a marble race or go on Netflix. I'll give you a better thing to watch than Ozark on Netflix, everyone. Go watch Mucho Mucho More. It's a documentary about the Latinx astrologer Walter Mercado. It's fantastic. One of the best things I've seen this year. Mauro. I'm not letting Mauro besmirch the good name of Walter Mercado.
I'm watching Ouragairu season 3. That's all I'm watching.
Okay, there we go.
Not only have I just like really taken up for Jason Bateman on this show, but I always think to myself, like, I really like Jason Bateman. And so I pulled up his filmography.
Okay.
And I've seen like 3 of these movies ever.
I know, because they're all the same movie, because he plays the same person since 1999. No,
but, okay, you can't be so mad about that. What's wrong with that?
It's boring.
Yeah, but if you're good at something, it's like Matt Damon, I think, is also an excellent actor, even though he always plays the same character.
No,
but he has
Matt
a
Damon
natural
has more range.
Yeah,
Matt Damon has
range.
Considerably more range.
Oh, yeah. I don't think so. He's always the same person. He just did a Boston accent one time. That's it.
So you're saying that you think that Justin Bateman is a better actor than Matt Damon?
I think
like
he's
Matt Damon
good.
in like Bourne and Matt Damon in like The Informant are totally different roles.
But it's the same shit. It's not like
no, totally different.
It's entirely different.
No,
it's actually displaying range.
Okay, one of us on this show studied acting. Is all I'm saying.
One of us on this show went to
grad school
for film theory.
Every time I watch something.
Yeah, no, and studying film—that's bullshit, Mike. I mean, we're talking about acting, not getting your dopey little camera and filming people doing something real, acting. I'm talking about getting in front of the camera, getting in the arena, and acting.
See, this is why we should just talk about hand-drawn animation that has the dignity of being drawn by an artist and doesn't have so much acting in it.
I'm with you on there, Nate.
What is... I don't even know what most...
Hit me. Yeah, hit me with the Jason Bateman credit.
Yeah, come on. All right. Let's do this.
What about... Paul, 2011's Paul.
Saw that. Was that with the Simon Pegg?
Yeah, it's Simon Pegg, Nick Frost.
The Alien.
The Alien.
Maybe Seth Rogen.
Yeah.
I think I followed the director of that at the time.
A Greg Mottola joint.
Greg Mottola, who I think did the Jesse Eisenberg, Kristen Stewart movie, Adventureland.
Oh, really? Yeah. I like Adventureland.
Liked Adventureland quite a bit. And there was a time where I was walking around, I want to say the Lower East Side, and looking at my phone, and Greg Mottola tweeted a picture of a billboard for Paul. And then I walked about 2 blocks and was standing in the exact same place where he had tweeted that picture from, because I saw the billboard. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, Greg Mottola was just here about 4 minutes ago. So there's my Paul thoughts. Not a memorable movie at all. Pretty middling.
How about 2012's Disconnect?
Never heard of it.
Yeah, that sounds fake.
Well, it explores how people experience the negative sides of modern communication technology by following 3 interconnecting stories.
Okay.
So it's like Crash, but about Twitter.
It's like, God, did you guys ever see, and I can't speak French, but Jatame?
Yeah.
You ever see that fucking
piece
of trash?
I saw La Boom. Au revoir les enfants.
Great movie.
Manon du Source. Saw that.
Oh, Je t'aime Paris. Did you ever see that?
Oh, Je t'aime Paris. Je t'aime?
Paris, Je t'aime. Yeah, no, that
I
was like...
I have not seen that, but well known.
No. It sucks fucking shit. And if Sarah's hearing me right now, she's going to murder me when I come out. She like loved this, and I was like, that was the biggest waste of my life.
No, like, it was like the weird, like, when everyone wanted to do like these compilation movies.
Yeah.
Like, most notably, like, Love Actually. Like, they like doing like these compilation, like,
that's
hiddenly
good.
Interweave.
Good,
is it?
Yeah.
They're not really the same, because Paris, Je t'aime was directed by different people, and Love Actually was one.
Also, want to be clear that Nate started this by saying he's definitely not seen it.
Paris, Je t'aime? Yeah, but I know it was directed by multiple people. I think
Natalie
Portman directed part of it, or she did the New York one, New York, I Love You. Same idea.
Yeah. No.
I like an anthology.
Movies.
Anthology.
Yeah, anthology.
I like an anthology.
I do.
I'm Not There was a good anthology movie.
Last one. I don't know. I want to do a funnier one, maybe.
I mean, were you going to do like Horrible Bosses?
No, I mean, I think everybody knows that one.
That delivered.
Peak
Jason Sudeikis.
2015's The Family Fang.
No.
What the fuck is that?
This is everybody except you, Aaron, maybe had their fill of Jason Bateman by like 2009, I think.
Yeah.
I don't think so, dude, because this guy's got a lot of fucking credits.
Yeah, because he also like does stuff himself and self-finances and has money behind it. Doesn't mean that it's good. It just means that he knows people that will make movies with him.
I didn't say any of these movies were good. I just think he's good. I like him personally as an actor.
And a person.
And as a person.
No, I don't want, I mean, I don't know. He's rich, so I probably hate him, but. All right. Okay, that's my.
I'm glad we could revisit Paul, though, because that's probably the most thought anyone's given Paul the film in, you know, 15 years.
Including people that whenever they get their residual checks from Paul.
Yes.
All right, well, I'm glad we could talk a little about Jason Bateman. Sound off in the comments on your Jason Bateman thoughts. All right, for Mike, for Nate, I'm Aaron. We'll see you next time.